He wore a good suit, linen and raw silk, without the lines and folds that spoke of computer tailoring. "Do what they say," the linen suit said. He sounded peeved, but not frightened. Miller's eyes narrowed. "Mr. Dresden?" The suit raised a carefully shaped eyebrow, paused and nodded. "Been looking for you," Miller said. Fred walked into the ops center like he belonged there. With a tighter set of the shoulders and a degree's shift of the spine, the master engineer of Tycho Station was gone, and the general was in his place. He looked over the ops center, sucking in every detail with a flicker of his eyes, then nodded at one of the senior OPA techs. "All locked down, sir," the tech said. "The station's yours." Miller had almost never been present to witness another man's moment of absolution. It was such a rare thing, and so utterly private that it approached the spiritual. Decades ago, this man, younger, fitter, not as much gray in his hair, had taken a space station, wading up to his knees in the gore and death of belters, and Miller saw the barely perceptible relaxation in his jaw, the opening of his chest that meant that burden had lifted. Maybe it wasn't gone, but it was near enough. It was more than most people managed in a lifetime. He wondered what it would feel like if he ever got the chance. "Miller," Fred said, "I hear you've got someone we'd like to talk to." Dresden unfolded from his chair, ignoring the sidearms and assault weapons as if such things didn't apply to him. "Colonel Johnson," Dresden said. "I should have expected that a man of your caliber would be behind all this. My name is Dresden." He handed Fred a matte black business card. Fred took it as if by reflex, but didn't look at it. "You're the one responsible for this?" Dresden gave him a chilly smile and looked around before he answered. "I'd say you're responsible for at least part of it," Dresden said. "You've just killed quite a few people who are simply doing their jobs. But maybe we can dispense with the moral finger-pointing and get down to what actually matters." Fred's smile reached all the way to his eyes. "And what exactly would that be?" "Negotiating terms," Dresden replied. "You are a man of experience. You understand that your victory here puts you in an untenable position. Protogen is one of the most powerful corporations on Earth. The OPA has attacked it, and the longer you try to hold it, the worse the reprisals will be." "Is that so?" "Of course it is," Dresden said, waving Fred's tone away with a dismissing hand. Miller shook his head. The man genuinely didn't understand what was going on. "You've taken your hostages. Well, here we are. We can wait until Earth sends a few dozen battleships and negotiate while you look down the barrels, or we can end this now." "You're asking me how much money I want to take my people and just leave," Fred said. "If money's what you want," Dresden said with a shrug, "weapons, ordnance, medical supplies, whatever it is you need to prosecute your little war and get this over with quickly." "I know what you did on Eros," Fred said quietly. Dresden chuckled. The sound made Miller's flesh crawl. "Mr. Johnson," Dresden said, "nobody knows what we did on Eros. And every minute I have to spend playing games with you is one I can't use more productively elsewhere. I will swear this. You are in the best bargaining position right now that you will ever have. There is no incentive for you to draw this out."
"And your offering?"
Dresden spread his hands. "Anything you like, and amnesty besides. As long as it gets you out of here and lets us return to our work, we both win. Fred laughed. It was mirthless. Let me get this straight, he said. You'll give me all the kingdoms of the earth if I just bow down and do one act of worship for you? Dresden cocked his head. I don't know the reference. Chapter 41. Holden. The Rocinante docked with Thoth Station on the last gasps from her maneuvering thrusters. Holden felt the station's docking clamps grab the hull with a thud, and then gravity returned at a low 1/3 G. The close detonation of a plasma warhead had torn off the outer door of the crew airlock and flooded the chamber with superheated gas, effectively welding it shut. That meant they'd be using the cargo airlock at the stern of the ship and spacewalking over to the station. That was fine. They were still in their suits. The Rossi had more holes now than the air cycling system could keep up with, and their shipboard O2 supply had been vented into space by the same explosion that killed the airlock. Alex dropped from the cockpit, face hidden by his helmet, his belly unmistakable even in his atmosphere suit. Naomi finished locking her station and powering down the ship, then joined Alex, and the three of them climbed down the crew ladder to the ship's aft. Amos was waiting there, buckling an EVA pack onto his suit and charging it with compressed nitrogen from a storage tank. The mechanic had assured Holden that the EVA maneuvering pack had enough thrust to overcome the station's spin and get them back up to an airlock. No one spoke. Holden had expected banter. He'd expected to want to banter. But the damaged Rossi seemed to call for silence. Maybe awe. Holden leaned against the cargo bay bulkhead and closed his eyes. The only sounds he could hear were the steady hiss of his air supply and the faint static of the comm. He could smell nothing through his broken and blood-clogged nose, and his mouth was filled with a coppery taste. But even so, he couldn't keep a smile off his face. They'd won. They'd flown right up to Protogen, taken everything the evil bastards could throw at them, and bloodied their noses. Even now, OPA soldiers were storming their station, shooting the people who'd helped kill Eros. Holden decided that he was okay with not feeling any remorse for them. The moral complexity of the situation had grown past his ability to process it, so he just relaxed in the warm glow of victory instead. The comm chirped and Amos said, "Ready to move." Holden nodded, remembered he was still in his atmosphere suit, and said, "Okay, hook on, everyone." He, Alex, and Naomi pulled tethers from their suits and clamped them to Amos's broad waist. Amos cycled the cargo airlock and flew out the door on puffs of gas. They were immediately hurled away from the ship by station spin, but Amos quickly got them under control and flew back up toward Thoth's emergency airlock. As Amos flew them past the Rossi, Holden studied the outside of the ship and tried to catalog repair requirements. There were a dozen holes in both her bow and aft that corresponded to holes all along the inside of the ship. The Gauss cannon rounds the interceptor had fired probably hadn't even slowed appreciably on their path through the Rossi. The crew was just lucky none of them had found the reactor and punched a hole in it. There was also a huge dent in the false superstructure that made the ship look like a compressed gas freighter. Holden knew it would match an equally ugly wound in the armored outer hull. The damage hadn't extended to the inner hull, or the ship would have cracked in two. With the damage to the airlock and the total loss of their oxygen storage tanks and recycling systems, there would be millions of dollars in damage and weeks in dry dock, assuming they could make it to a dry dock somewhere. Maybe the Molinari could give them a tow. Amos flashed the EVA pack's yellow warning lights 3 times, and the station's emergency airlock door cycled open. He flew them inside, where 4 belters in combat armor waited. As soon as the airlock finished cycling, Holden pulled his helmet off and touched his nose. It felt twice its normal size and throbbed with every heartbeat. Naomi reached out and held his face still, her thumbs on either side of his nose, her touch surprisingly gentle. She turned his head from side to side, examining the injury, then let go. "It'll be crooked without some cosmetic surgery," she said. "But you were too pretty before, anyway. It'll give your face character." Holden felt a slow grin coming on, but before he could reply, one of the OPA troops started talking.
"Watch the fight, hermano. You guys really kick some ass."
"Thanks," said Alex. "How's it going in here?"
The soldier with the most stars on his OPA insignia said, "Less resistance than expected, but the Protogen security's been fighting for every foot of real estate. Even some of the eggheads have been coming at us. We've had to shoot a few." He pointed at the inner airlock door.
"Fred's heading up to ops. Wants you people up there pronto."
"Lead the way," Holden replied, his nose turning it into "lead the way."
"How's that leg, Cap?"
Amos asked as they walked along the station corridor. Holden realized he'd forgotten about the limp his gunshot to the calf had left him.
"Doesn't hurt, but the muscle doesn't flex as much," he replied.
"Yours?" Amos grinned and glanced down at the leg that still limped from the fracture he'd suffered on the Doniger months earlier.
"No biggie," he said. "The ones that don't kill you don't count."
Holden started to reply, then stopped when the group rounded a corner into a slaughterhouse. They were clearly coming up behind the assault team, because now the corridor floor was littered with bodies, the walls with bullet holes and scorch marks. To his relief, Holden saw a lot more bodies in Protogen security armor than in OPA gear, but there were enough dead belters on the floor to make his stomach twist. When he passed a dead man in a lab coat, he had to stop himself from spitting on the floor. The security guys had maybe made a bad decision in going to work for the wrong team, but the scientists on this station had killed 1.5 million people just to see what would happen. They couldn't be dead enough for Holden's comfort. Something tugged at him, and he paused. Lying next to the dead scientist was what looked like a kitchen knife.
"Huh," Holden said.
"He didn't come at you guys with that, did he?"
"Yeah, crazy, no?" said one of their escorts. "I've heard of bringing a knife to a gunfight, but..."
"Ops is up ahead," said the ranking trooper. "General's waiting."
Holden entered the station ops center and saw Fred, Miller, a bunch of OPA troops, and 1 stranger in an expensive-looking suit. A line of technicians and operations staff in Protogen uniform had their wrists cuffed and were being led away. The room was covered deck to ceiling in screens and monitors, most of which were spooling text data too fast to read.
"Let me get this straight," Fred was saying. "You'll give me all the kingdoms of the earth if I just bow down and do 1 act of worship for you."
"I don't know the reference," the stranger said. Whatever else they were about to say stopped when Miller noticed Holden and tapped Fred on the shoulder. Holden could swear that the detective gave him a warm smile, though on his dour face it was hard to tell.
"Jim," Fred said, then gestured for him to come closer.
He was reading a matte black business card.
"Meet Anthony Dresden, Executive VP of Bio Research for Protogen and the architect of the Eros Project."
The asshole in the suit actually reached out like he was going to shake hands.
Holden ignored him.
Fred, he said, casualties?
Shockingly low.
Half their security had non-lethals, Miller said. Riot control, sticky rounds, like that.
Holden nodded and then shook his head and frowned.
I saw a lot of Protogen security bodies out there in the corridor. Why have so many guys and give them weapons that can't repel borders?
Good question, Miller agreed.
Dresden chuckled.
This is what I mean, Mr. Johnson, Dresden said. He turned to Holden.
Jim?
Well then, Jim, the fact that you don't understand this station's security needs tells me that you have no idea what you've become involved with. And I think you know that as well as I do. As I was saying to Fred here,
Anthony, you need to shut the fuck up, Holden said, surprised by the sudden flush of anger.
Dresden looked disappointed. The bastard had no right to be comfortable, condescending. Holden wanted the man terrified, begging for his life, not sneering behind his cultured accent.
Amos, if he talks to me again without being told to, break his jaw.
My pleasure, Captain,
Amos said, and took half a step forward.
Dresden smirked at the ham-fisted threat, but kept his mouth shut.
What do we know?
Holden asked, aiming the question at Fred.
We know the Eros data is coming here, and we know this piece of shit is in charge. We'll know more once we've taken the place apart.
Holden turned to look at Dresden again, taking in the blue-blood European good looks, the gym-sculpted physique, the expensive haircut. Even now, surrounded by men with guns, Dresden managed to look like he was in charge. Holden could imagine him glancing down at his watch and wondering how much more of his expensive time this boarding party was going to take.
Holden said, I need to ask him something.
Fred nodded.
You earned it.
Why?
Holden asked.
I want to know why.
Dresden's smile was almost pitying, and he stuck his hands into his pockets as casually as a man talking sports at a dockside bar.
Why is a very big question, Dresden said. Because God wanted it that way?
Or perhaps you want to narrow it for me.
Why Eros?
Well, Jim, you can call me Captain Holden. I'm the guy that found your lost ship, so I've seen the video from Phoebe.
I know what the protomolecule is.
Really?
Dresden said, his smile becoming half a degree more genuine.
I have you to thank for turning the viral agent over to us on Eros. Losing the Anubis was going to put our timeline back months. Finding the infected body already there on the station was a godsend.
I knew it. I fucking knew it, Holden thought. Out loud, he said, Why?
You know what the agent is,
Dresden said, at a loss for the first time since Holden had come into the room.
I don't know what more I can tell you. This is the most important thing to ever happen to the human race. It's simultaneously proof that we are not alone in the universe, and our ticket out of the limitations that bind us to our little bubbles of rock and air.
You aren't answering me, Holden said, hating the way his broken nose made his voice slightly comical when he wanted to be threatening. I want to know why you killed 1.5 million people.
Fred cleared his throat, but he didn't interrupt.
Dresden looked from Holden to the colonel and back again.
I am answering, Captain. 1.5 million people is small potatoes.
What we're working with here is bigger than that, Dresden said.
Then moved over to a chair and sat down, pulling up his pants leg as he crossed his knees so as not to stretch the fabric.
Are you familiar with Genghis Khan?
What?
Holden and Fred said at almost the same instant. Miller only stared at Dresden with a blank expression, tapping the barrel of his pistol against his own armored thigh.
Genghis Khan. There are some historians who claim that Genghis Khan killed or displaced 1/4 of the total human population of Earth during his conquest, Dresden said. He did that in pursuit of an empire that would begin falling apart as soon as he died. In today's scale, that would mean killing nearly 10 billion people in order to affect a generation and a half. Eros isn't even a rounding error by comparison.
You really don't care, Fred said, his voice quiet.
And unlike Khan, we aren't doing it to build a brief empire. I know what you think, that we're trying to aggrandize ourselves, grab power.
You don't want to? Holden said.
Of course we do. Dresden's voice was cutting. But you're thinking too small. Building humanity's greatest empire is like building the world's largest anthill. Insignificant. There is a civilization out there that built the protomolecule and hurled it at us over 2 billion years ago. They were already gods at that point. What have they become since then, with another 2 billion years to advance? With a growing dread, Holden listened to Dresden speak. This speech had the air of something spoken before, perhaps many times, and it had worked. It had convinced powerful people. It was why Protogen had stealth ships from the Earth shipyards and seemingly limitless behind-the-scenes support. We have a terrifying amount of catching up to do, gentlemen, Dresden was saying. But fortunately, we have the tool of our enemy to use in doing it.
Catching up? A soldier to Holden's left said.
Dresden nodded at the man and smiled. The protomolecule can alter the host organism at the molecular level. It can create genetic change on the fly. Not just DNA, but any stable replicator. But it is only a machine. It doesn't think. It follows instructions. If we learn how to alter that programming, then we become the architects of that change. Holden interrupted. If it was supposed to wipe out life on Earth and replace it with whatever the protomolecule's creators wanted, why turn it loose?
Excellent question, Dresden said, holding up one finger like a college professor about to deliver a lecture.
The protomolecule doesn't come with a user's manual. In fact, we've never before been able to actually watch it carry out its program. The molecule requires significant mass before it develops enough processing power to fulfill its directives, whatever they are. Dresden pointed at the screens covered with data around them. We are going to watch it at work, see what it intends to do, how it goes about doing it, and hopefully learn how to change that program in the process.
You could do that with a vat of bacteria, Holden said.
I'm not interested in remaking bacteria, Dresden said.
You're fucking insane, Amos said, and took another step toward Dresden.
Holden put a hand on the big mechanic's shoulder.
So, Holden said, you figure out how the bug works, and then what?
Then everything. Belters who can work outside a ship without wearing a suit. Humans capable of sleeping for hundreds of years at a time, flying colony ships to the stars, no longer being bound to the millions of years of evolution inside one atmosphere of pressure at 1G, slaves to oxygen and water. We decide what we want to be, and we reprogram ourselves to be that. That's what the protomolecule gives us. Dresden had stood back up as he'd delivered this speech, his face shining with the zeal of a prophet. What we are doing is the best and only hope of humanity's survival. When we go out there, we will be facing gods.
And if we don't go out? Fred asked. He sounded thoughtful.
They've already fired a doomsday weapon at us once, Dresden said. The room was silent for a moment. Holden felt his certainty slip. He hated everything about Dresden's argument, but he couldn't quite see his way past it. He knew in his bones that something about it was dead wrong, but he couldn't find the words. Naomi's voice startled him. "Did it convince them?" she asked.
"Excuse me?" Dresden said.
"The scientists, the technicians, everyone you needed to make it happen. They actually had to do this. They had to watch the video of people dying all over Eros. They had to design those radioactive murder chambers. So, unless you manage to round up every serial killer in the solar system and send them through a postgraduate program, how did you do this?"
"We modified our science team to remove ethical restraints."
Half a dozen clues clicked into place in Holden's head. "Sociopaths," he said.
"You turned them into sociopaths."
"High-functioning sociopaths," Dresden said with a nod. He seemed pleased to explain it. "And extremely curious ones. As long as we kept them supplied with interesting problems to solve and unlimited resources, they remained quite content."
"And a big security team armed with riot control rounds for when they aren't," Fred said.
"Yes, there are occasional issues," Dresden said. He looked around, the slightest frown creasing his forehead.
"I know you think it's monstrous, but I am saving the human race. I am giving humanity the stars. You disapprove? Fine. Let me ask you this. Can you save Eros right now?"
"No," Fred said, "but we can waste the data," Dresden said. "You can make certain that every man, woman, and child who died on Eros died for nothing."
The room was silent. Fred was frowning, his arms crossed. Holden understood the struggle going on in the man's mind. Everything Dresden said was repulsive and eerie and rang too much of the truth.
"Or," Dresden said, "we can negotiate a price. You can go on your way, and I can..."
"Okay, that's enough," Miller said, speaking for the first time since Dresden had begun his pitch.
Holden glanced over at the detective. His flat expression had gone stony. He wasn't tapping the barrel of his pistol against his leg.
Oh, shit.
Chapter 42. Miller. Dresden didn't see it coming. Even as Miller raised the pistol, the man's eyes didn't register a threat. All he saw was Miller with an object in his hand that happened to be a gun. A dog would have known to be scared, but not Dresden.
"Miller!" Holden shouted from a great distance. "Don't!"
Pulling the trigger was simple. A soft click, the bounce of metal against his glove-cushioned palm, and then again, two more times. Dresden's head snapped back, blooming red. Blood spattered a wide screen, obscuring the data stream. Miller stepped close, fired two more rounds into Dresden's chest, considered for a moment, then holstered the pistol. The room was silent. The OPA soldiers were all looking at each other, or at Miller, surprised, even after the press of the assault, by the sudden violence. Naomi and Amos were looking at Holden, and the captain was staring at the corpse. Holden's injured face was set as a mask, fury, outrage, maybe even despair. Miller understood that. Doing the obvious thing still wasn't natural for Holden. There had been a time when it hadn't come so easily for Miller either. Only Fred didn't flinch or look nervous. The colonel didn't smile or frown.
and he didn't look away.
What the fuck was that? Holden said through his blood-plugged nose. You shot him in cold blood.
Yeah, Miller said. Holden shook his head.
What about a trial? What about justice? You just decide and that's the way it goes?
I'm a cop, Miller said, surprised by the apology in his voice.
Are you even human anymore?
All right, gentlemen, Fred said, his voice booming out in the quiet. Show's over. Let's get back to work. I want the decryption team in here. We've got prisoners to evacuate and a station to strip down.
Holden looked from Fred to Miller to the still dying Dresden. His jaw was set with rage.
Hey, Miller, Holden said.
Yeah, Miller said softly. He knew what was coming.
Find your own ride home,
the captain of the Rocinante said, then spun and stalked out of the room, his crew following. Miller watched them walk away. Regret tapped gently at his heart, but there was nothing to be done about it. The broken bulkhead seemed to swallow them. Miller turned to Fred.
Hitch a lift?
You're wearing our colors, Fred said. We'll get you as far as Tycho.
I appreciate that, Miller said. Then, a moment later,
you know it had to be done.
Fred didn't reply. There wasn't anything to say. Thoth Station was injured, but not dead. Not yet. Word of the sociopathic crew spread fast, and the OPA forces took the warning to heart. The occupation and control phase of the attack lasted 40 hours instead of the 20 that it would have taken with normal prisoners, with humans. Miller did what he could with prisoner control. The OPA kids were well-intentioned, but most of them had never worked with captive populations before. They didn't know how to cuff someone at the wrist and elbow so that the perp couldn't get his hands out in front to strangle them. They didn't know how to restrain someone with a length of cord around the neck so that the prisoner couldn't choke himself to death by accident or intentionally. Half of them didn't even know how to pat someone down. Miller knew all of it like a game he'd played since childhood. In 5 hours, he found 20 hidden blades on the science crew alone. He hardly had to think about it. A second wave of transport ships arrived. Personnel haulers that looked ready to spill their air out into the vacuum if you spat on them. Salvage trawlers already dismantling the shielding and superstructure of the station. Supply ships boxing and packing the precious equipment and looting the pharmacies and food banks. By the time news of the assault reached Earth, the station would be stripped to a skeleton, and its people hidden away in unlicensed prison cells throughout the belt. Protogen would know sooner, of course. They had outposts much closer than the inner planets. There was a calculus of response time and possible gain. The mathematics of piracy and war. Miller knew it, but he didn't let it worry him. Those were decisions for Fred and his attachés to make. Miller had taken more than enough initiative for one day. Post-human. It was a word that came up in the media every 5 or 6 years, and it meant different things every time. Neural regrowth hormone? Post-human. Sex robots with inbuilt pseudo-intelligence? Post-human. Self-optimizing network routing? Post-human. It was a word from advertising copy, breathless and empty. And all he'd ever thought it really meant was that the people using it had a limited imagination about what exactly humans were capable of. Now, as he escorted a dozen captives in Protogen uniforms to a docked transport heading God knew where, the word was taking on new meaning. Are you even human anymore? All post-human meant, literally speaking, was what you were when you weren't human anymore. Protomolecule aside, protogen aside,
Dresden and his Mengele as Genghis Khan's self-righteous fantasies aside, Miller thought that maybe he'd been ahead of the curve all along. Maybe he'd been post-human for years. The min-max point came 40 hours later, and it was time to go. The OPA had skeletonized the station, and it was time to get out before anyone came along with vengeance in mind. Miller sat in a crash couch, his blood dancing with spent amphetamines, and his mind slipping into and out of exhaustion psychosis. The thrust gravity was like a pillow over his face. He was vaguely aware that he was weeping. It didn't mean anything. In Miller's haze, Dresden was talking again, pouring out promises and lies, half-truths and visions. Miller could see the words themselves, like a dark smoke, coalescing into the spilling black filament of the protomolecule. The threads of it were reaching toward Holden, Amos, Naomi. He tried to find his gun, to stop it, to do the obvious thing. His despairing shout woke him, and he remembered he'd already won. Julie sat beside him, her hand cool against his forehead. Her smile was gentle, understanding, forgiving. "Sleep," she said, and his mind fell into the deep black.
"Oi, Pampa," Diogo said. "A seaman now, sabes?"
It was Miller's 10th morning back on Tycho, his 7th hot bunking in Diogo's closet-sized apartment. He could tell from the buzz in the boy's voice it would have to be one of the last. Fish and company start to smell after 3 days. He rolled off the thin bed, ran fingers through his hair, and nodded. Diogo stripped down and crawled into the bed without speaking. He stank of liquor and cheap, tub-grown marijuana. Miller's terminal told him that the second shift had ended 2 hours before, the third shift halfway into its morning. He gathered his things in his suitcase, turned off the lights on Diogo's already snoring form, and trundled out to the public showers to spend a few of his remaining credits trying to look less homeless. The pleasant surprise of his return to Tycho Station was the boost of money in his account. The OPA, meaning Fred Johnson, had paid him for his time on Thoth. He hadn't asked for it, and there was part of him that wanted to turn the payment down. If there had been an alternative, he might have. Since there wasn't, he tried to stretch the funds out as far as they would go and appreciate the irony. He and Captain Shadid were on the same payroll after all. For the first few days after his return to Tycho, Miller had expected to see the attack on Thoth in the news feeds. "Earth Corporation loses research station to crazed belters," or some such. He should have been finding a job or a place to sleep that wasn't charity. He meant to, but the hours seemed to dissolve as he sat in the bar or the lounges, watching the screens for just a few more minutes. The Martian Navy had suffered a series of harassing attacks by belters. A half-ton of super-accelerated gravel had forced two of their battleships to change course. A slowdown in water harvesting on Saturn's rings was either an illegal work stoppage, and therefore treasonous, or the natural response to increased security needs. Two Earth-owned mining operations had been attacked by either Mars or the OPA. 400 people were dead. Earth's blockade of Mars was entering its third month. A coalition of scientists and terraforming specialists were screaming that the cascading processes were in danger, and that while the war would be over in a year or two, the loss of supplies would set the terraforming effort back generations. Everyone blamed everyone else for Eros. Thoth Station didn't exist. It would, though. With most of the Martian Navy still in the outer planets, Earth's siege was a brittle thing. Time was getting short. Either the Martians would go home and try facing down the somewhat older, somewhat slower, but more numerous ships of Earth, or they'd go straight for the planet itself. Earth was still the source of a thousand things that couldn't be grown elsewhere. But if someone got happy, or cocksure, or desperate, it wouldn't take much to start dropping rocks down the gravity wells. All of it as a distraction. There was an old joke. Miller didn't remember where he'd heard it. Girls at her own father's funeral meets this really cute guy. They talk, hit it off, but he leaves before she can get his number. Girl doesn't know how to track the guy down. So, a week later, she kills her mom. Big laugh. It was the logic of Protogen, of Dresden, of Thoth. Here is the problem, they said to themselves, and there is the solution. That it was drowned in innocent blood was as trivial as the font the reports were printed in. They had disconnected themselves from humanity, shut off the cell clusters in their brains that made life besides their own sacred, or valuable, or worth saving. All it had cost them was every human connection. Funny how familiar that sounded. The guy who walked into the bar and nodded to Miller was one of Diogo's friends, 20 years old, or maybe a little south of that, a veteran of Thoth Station, just like Miller. He didn't remember the kid's name, but he'd seen him around often enough to know that the way he held himself was different than usual. Tight wound. Miller tapped the mute on his terminal's newsfeed and made his way over. "Hey," he said. And the kid looked up sharply. The face was tense, but a softer, intentional ease tried to mask it. It was just Diogo's old grandpa. The one everyone on Thoth knew who'd killed the biggest dick in the universe. It won Miller some points, so the kid smiled and nodded to the stool beside him.
"Oh, pretty fucked up, isn't it?" Miller said. "You don't know the half," the kid said.
He had a clipped accent. Belter by his height, but educated. Technician, probably. The kid tabbed in a drink order, and the bar offered up a glass of clear fluid so volatile Miller could watch it evaporate. The kid drank it down with a gulp.
"Doesn't work," Miller said.
The kid looked over. Miller shrugged.
"They say drinking helps, but it doesn't," Miller said.
"No?"
"Nope. Sex, sometimes, if you've got a girl who'll talk to you after. Or target practice. Working out, sometimes. Liquor doesn't make you feel better. Just makes you not so worried about feeling bad."
The kid laughed and shook his head. He was on the edge of talking, so Miller sat back and let the quiet do his work for him. He figured the kid had killed somebody, probably on Thoth, and it was sneaking up on him. But instead of telling the story, the kid took Miller's terminal, keyed in a few local codes, and handed it back. A huge menu of feeds appeared. Video, audio, air pressure and content, radiological. It took Miller half a second to understand what he was seeing. They'd cracked the encryption on the Eros feeds. He was looking at the protomolecule in action. He was seeing Juliet Andromeda Mao's corpse writ large. For a moment, his imagined Julie flickered beside him. "If you ever wonder if you did the right thing shooting that guy," the kid said, "look at that." Miller opened a feed. A long corridor, wide enough for 20 people to walk abreast. The flooring was wet and undulating, like the surface of a canal. Something small rolled awkwardly through the mush. When Miller zoomed in, it was a human torso, ribcage, spine, trailing lengths of what used to be intestines, and were now the long black threads of the protomolecule, pushing itself along on the stump of an arm. There was no head. The feed output bar showed there was sound, and Miller undid the mute. The high, mindless piping reminded him of mentally ill children singing to themselves. "It's all like that," the kid said. "Whole station's crawling with shit like that."
"What's it doing?"
"Building something," the kid said and shuddered. "I thought you should see it."
"Yeah?"
Miller said, his gaze nailed to the screen.
"What did I ever do to you?"
The kid laughed.
"Everyone thinks you're a hero for killing that guy," the kid said. "Everyone thinks we should push every last prisoner we took off that station out an airlock."
"Probably should," Miller thought, "if we can't make them human again."
He switched the feed. The casino level, where he and Holden had been, or else a section very like it. A webwork of something like bones linked ceiling and roof. Black, slug-like things a yard long slithered up and between them. The sound was a hushing, like the recordings he'd heard of surf against a beach. He switched again. The port, with bulkheads closed and encrusted with huge nautilus spirals that seemed to shift while he watched them.
"Everyone thinks you're a fucking hero," the kid said.
And this time, it bit a little. Miller shook his head.
"Nah," he said. "Just a guy who used to be a cop."
Why should going into a firefight, charging into an enemy station filled with people and automatic systems built to kill you, seem less frightening than talking to people who you shipped with for weeks? And still, it was third shift, and the bar at the observation platform was set to imitate night. The air was scented with something smoky that wasn't smoke. A piano and bass dueled lazily with each other while a man's voice lamented in Arabic. Dim lights glowed at the bases of the tables, casting soft shadows up across faces and bodies, emphasizing the customers' legs and bellies and breasts. The shipyards beyond the windows were busy as always. If he went close, he could pick out the Rosinante, still recovering from its wounds. Not dead, and being made stronger. Amos and Naomi were at a table in a corner. No sign of Alex, no sign of Holden. That made it easier. Not easy, but closer. He made his way toward them. Naomi saw him first, and Miller read the discomfort in her expression, covered over as quickly as it appeared. Amos turned to see what she'd been reacting to, and the corners of his mouth and eyes didn't shift into a frown or a smile. Miller scratched his arm, even though it didn't itch.
"Hey," he said, "buy you folks around?"
The silence lasted a beat longer than it should have, and then Naomi forced a smile.
"Sure, just one. We've got that thing for the captain."
"Oh, yeah," Amos said, lying even more awkwardly than Naomi had, making his awareness of the fact part of the message. "The thing that's important."
Miller sat, lifted a hand for the waiter to see, and when the man nodded, leaned forward with his elbows on the table. It was the seated version of a fighter's crouch, bent forward with his arms protecting the soft places in his neck and belly. It was the way a man stood when he expected injury. The waiter came, and then beers all around. Miller paid for them with the OPA's money and took a sip.
"How's the ship?"
he asked at last.
"Coming together," Naomi said.
"They really banged the hell out of her."
"She'll still fly," Amos said. "She's one tough bitch."
"That's good."
When... Miller said, then tripped on his words and had to start again.
When are you folks shipping out?
Whenever the captain says, Amos said with a shrug.
We're airtight now, so could go tomorrow, if he's got some place he wants to be.
And if Fred lets us, Naomi said, and then grimaced like she wished she'd kept silent.
That an issue?
Miller asked.
Is the OPA leaning on Holden?
It's just something I was thinking about, Naomi said. It's nothing. Look, thanks for the drink, Miller, but I really think we'd better be going. Miller took a long breath and let it out slow.
Yeah, he said. Okay. You head out,
Amos said to Naomi.
I'll catch up.
Naomi shot a confused look at the big man, but Amos only gave back a smile. It could have meant anything. Okay, Naomi said. But don't be long, okay? The thing.
For the captain, Amos said. No worries.
Naomi rose and walked away. Her effort not to look back over her shoulder was visible. Miller looked at Amos. The lights gave the mechanic a slightly demonic appearance.
Naomi's a good person, Amos said. I like her, you know, like my kid sister, only smart, and I'd do her if she let me, you know?
Yeah, Miller said.
I like her too. She's not like us,
Amos said, and the warmth and humor were gone.
That's why I like her, Miller said.
It was the right thing to say. Amos nodded.
So here's the thing. As far as the captain goes, you're dipped in shit right now.
The scrim of bubbles where his beer touched the glass glowed white in the dim light. Miller gave the glass a quarter turn, watching them closely.
Because I killed someone who needed it?
Miller asked. The bitterness in his voice wasn't surprising, but it was deeper than he'd intended. Amos didn't hear it, or else didn't care.
Because you've got a habit of that, Amos said. Captain's not like that. Killing people without talking it over first makes him jumpy. You did a lot of that on Eros, but you know.
Yeah, Miller said.
Thoth Station wasn't Eros. Next place we go won't be Eros either.
Holden doesn't want you around.
And the rest of you?
Miller asked.
We don't want you around either, Amos said.
His voice wasn't hard or gentle. He was talking about the gauge of a machine part. He was talking about anything. The words hit Miller in the belly, just where he'd expected it. He couldn't have blocked them.
Here's the thing, Amos went on. You and me... We're a lot the same. Been around. I know what I am. And my moral compass? I tell you, it's fucked. A few things fell different when I was a kid. I could have been those ass bandits on Thoth. I know that.
Captain couldn't have been.
It's not in him. He's as close to righteous as anyone out here gets. And when he says you're out... That's just the way it is. Because the way I figure it, he's probably right. Sure as hell has a better chance than I do.
Okay, Miller said.
Yeah, Amos said.
He finished his beer. Then he finished Naomi's. And then he walked away, leaving Miller to himself and his empty gut. Outside, the Nauvoo fanned a glittering array of sensors, testing something, or else just preening. Miller waited. Beside him, Julie Mao leaned on the table, just where Amos had been.
So, she said, looks like it's just you and me now.
Looks like, he said.
Chapter 43. Holden. A Tyco worker in blue coveralls and a welding mask sealed up the hole in one of the galley bulkheads. Holden watched with his hand shielding his eyes from the harsh blue glare of the torch. When the plate steel was secured in place, the welder flipped her mask up to check the bead. She had blue eyes, and a small mouth and a heart-shaped pixie face, and a mop of red hair pulled into a bun. Her name was Sam, and she was the team leader on the Rocinante repair project. Amos had been chasing her for 2 weeks now with no success. Holden was glad because the pixie had turned out to be one of the best mechanics he'd ever met, and he'd hate for her to focus on anything other than his ship. "It's perfect," he said to her as she ran one gloved hand over the cooling metal. "It's okay," she said with a shrug. "We'll grind this down smooth enough, paint it nice, then you'll never even know your ship had a boo-boo." She had a surprisingly deep voice that contrasted with her looks and her habit of using mockingly childlike phrases. Holden guessed that her appearance, combined with her chosen profession, had led to a lot of people underestimating her in the past. He didn't want to make that mistake. "You've done amazing work, Sam," he said. He guessed Sam was short for something, but he'd never asked and she'd never volunteered. "I keep telling Fred how happy we are to have you in charge of this job." "Maybe I'll get a gold star in my next report card," she said, while she put her torch away and stood up. Holden tried to think of something to say to that and failed. "Sorry," she said, turning to face him. "I appreciate your praise to the boss. And to be honest, it's been a lot of fun working on your little girl. She's quite a ship. The beating she took would have blown anything we own into scrap." "It was a close thing, even for us," Holden replied. Sam nodded, then began putting the rest of her gear away. As she worked, Naomi climbed down the crew ladder from the upper decks. Her gray coveralls hung with electrician's tools. "How are things up there?" Holden asked. 90%, Naomi said as she crossed the galley to the refrigerator and took out a bottle of juice. "Give or take." She took out a second bottle and tossed it to Sam, who caught it one-handed. "Naomi," Sam said, raising the bottle in mock toast before downing half of it in one swallow. "Sammy," Naomi said in return with a grin. The two of them had hit it off right away, and now Naomi was spending a lot of her off time with Sam and her Tyco crowd. Holden hated to admit it, but he missed being the only social circle Naomi had. When he did admit it to himself, like now, it made him feel like a creep. "Golgo comp and wreck tonight?" Sam said after she'd gulped down the last of her drink. "Think those C7 chumps are tired of getting their asses handed to them?" Naomi said in return. To Holden, it sounded like they were speaking in code. "We can throw the first one," Sam said. "Get him hooked tight before we drop the hammer and wipe their roll." "Sounds good to me," Naomi said, then tossed her empty bottle into the recycling bin and started back up the ladder. "See you at 8, then." She tossed a little wave at Holden. "Later, Captain." Holden said, "How much longer, do you think?" to Sam's back as she finished with her tools. Sam shrugged. "Couple days, maybe, to get her to perfect. She could probably fly now, if you're not worried about non-essentials and cosmetics." "Thanks again," Holden said, holding out his hand to Sam as she turned around. She shook it once, her palm heavily calloused and her grip firm. "And I hope you mop the floor with those chumps from C7. She gave him a predatory grin. "It's not even in doubt." Through Fred Johnson, the OPA had provided the crew with living quarters on the station during the renovation of the Rossi, and over the past few weeks, Holden's cabin had almost come to feel like home. Tyco had money, and they seemed to spend a lot of it on their employees. Holden had 3 rooms to himself, including a bath and a kitchen nook off the public space.
On most stations, you'd have to be the governor to have that kind of luxury. Holden had the impression it was fairly standard for management on Tycho. He tossed his grimy jumpsuit into the laundry bin